In a small town in northern New Jersey lived a woman named Ellen Greenberg. Ellen Greenberg was born on June 23, 1983 to Josh and Sandy in northern New Jersey as an only child. She was described as fun, loving, and had a bubbly personality and a contagious smile. And a lot of people would say that every time you saw Ellen, she was either smiling or laughing and just had a very open aura to her. After middle school, her and her parents moved to Harrisburg, New York, where she went to Susquehanna Township High School. Ellen was described as a very smart girl and had a very caring personality, and also she was absolutely gorgeous. But Ellen was the type of pretty girl that was nice to everyone she met. She was super involved with her school as well and did a lot of academic clubs and played sports like softball and golf. And after high school, she attended Penn State University, where she majored in communications and was still involved in school. She would attend all of the school's games, and she was said to be the one that brought the school spirit. She was also a tour guide for the new people touring the school and also helped out on the football field. Ellen was known in her college for being warm and outgoing, and Ellen was the kind of girl where if she saw someone who was a little quiet or not really talking, she would talk to them and try to include them in conversations. And literally, oh my God, God bless people who do that, because I'm personally a very shy person. And so when people do that to me and reel me into conversations, I get so happy and feel so included. And Ellen was that type of person. And then after college, Ellen pursued her dreams of becoming a speech pathologist. But unfortunately, Ellen tried it and didn't really like it and kind of lost all her passion for it. And so instead, she decided to change her career and continue school, where she took night classes at Temple University to earn her teaching certifications and become a teacher. And as she was shooting for her teaching certificate, that is when she would meet a man by the name of Sam Goldberg through mutual friends at a party. Sam Goldberg grew up into wealth, but although his family had money, he was very accomplished himself and was a TV producer for NBC for the past 7 years. And then, short after, he got a job at golf.com. The two of them began talking and later on started dating and seemed very happy with one another, especially Ellen. She was said to be head over heels for Sam and even started to build a future with one another. Ellen and Sam moved into an apartment, both got successful jobs, and later got engaged. In 2010, things were going really well for Ellen and her entire life. She was engaged and planning her dream wedding. She had got her first teaching job as a first grade teacher at Juanita Park Academy. And Ellen loved her job. I mean, as I just said, Ellen was bubbly. She had a warm and kind, caring aura to her. So that is the perfect energy you need as a teacher. So she absolutely loved her job. And she also got the job because Ellen's father-in-law worked at the school. She had the perfect personality for kids. She was electric and all the kids wanted her to be their teacher. Some teachers said that usually when kids walked into a room and they see a substitute, they get excited, thinking that they're gonna stir up trouble or switch seats. But actually, when Ellen's kids saw that they had a substitute that day, they would get extremely sad and start asking other teachers where Ellen went. And so as you can see, at this point in Ellen's life, it's really going well for her. And so it would be surprising when Ellen's mom, Sandy, would get a call from Ellen saying that she wants to move back home. Her parents were very confused because Ellen seemed so excited about her life. She had been planning her wedding, starting her life with Sam, and the both of them planned on getting married in August of that year at the Hershey Hotel. So her parents question why she wants to move back home, and Ellen gives answers, but nothing really specific. It's more vague, like, oh, I've just been stressed out lately, and she's been in a funk, unable to pull herself out of it, and she just feels like she needs a change of scenery, and that would be the best for her. Mind you, at this time, Ellen and Sam lived together in Pennsylvania, while Ellen's parents still lived back in Harrisburg, New York, a little over 5 hours away. So if Ellen moved, she had to give up everything she's worked for. Her teaching job that she loved so much, all of the kids that she taught, all of the friends that she made from college and through her school, people she saw, and including Sam. So what made Ellen just want to get up and leave so randomly? So the parents suggested that maybe if Ellen's feeling a little burnt out, she should see a psychiatrist first before making any big decisions and moving back home. home. So that's what Ellen did. She went to 3 appointments, January 12th, 17th, and 19th of 2011. Her psychiatrist had suggested some anti-anxiety medications, and it took a couple of tries to get the dose right, but once it did, Ellen felt amazing. Ellen's mom, Sandy, would go on to say that Ellen would call her saying how good she feels on her new medication. She has new motivations, a lust for life, and she feels like she finally got her bounce back, and so she started working on wedding plans again. Hello, everyone. Don't worry, it's still me, just thanking the sponsor of today's video, Shopify. Now, as a lot of you guys know, starting a business is not easy, and it's 10 times harder when you have to do it alone. Good ideas always come from collaboration. And there's been a couple of partners in crime that have gotten it done, such as Watson and Holmes, Cagney and Lacey, the Hardy Boys. But what makes the perfect partner when it comes to growing your business? That is you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the real first life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you are selling sleuthing supplies or marketing mystery merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers and the internet's best converting checkouts, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Shopify helps you sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And I personally, add aside, like, I really do love Shopify, and genuinely every single person that I've met that does use Shopify have always said great things about them. I feel like Shopify, compared to a lot of other large corporations, genuinely really do care about their business owners. They're always staying really connected with their community and always giving back to their community. And I don't know, I just feel like that's one of the main things that I really look for in certain companies that I decide to put my services into. You always want to just work with a company that is for you and by your side every step of the way. And I feel like Shopify really does do that. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of others entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/behind, and now grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/behind. Thank you once again to Shopify for sponsoring today's episode. Now back to your episode.
Ellen would even go out to send out all of her save the date invitations to her family and friends in preparation. And that same weekend she would send out the invitations, Ellen would go dress shopping with a friend who was also getting married, and Ellen was her bridesmaid. But this friend would go on to say that when the two of them had met up that day to hang out, Ellen just seemed a little off. Ellen was always the type of person to get dressed up, even if it was just something as little as going to the grocery store or going out for a walk. Ellen was always the type of person to pull herself together. She would put on a little makeup, do her hair, put on a cute outfit. But Ellen's friend would go on to say that on this specific day, Ellen looked a little disheveled. Her hair was not done, she didn't have any makeup on, she was wearing sweatpants. Now, there's nothing wrong with not having your hair done, not having makeup, or wearing sweatpants, but for Ellen, this was very, very odd, because Ellen took a lot of care into her physical appearance. And so when Ellen and this friend went to the mall, they also met up with a couple of other friends that would go on to say the same thing. Her friends would also go on to say that as they were trying on dresses in Ellen's fitting room, her friends started to hear Ellen cry through the door. And so her one friend knocked on the door and asked what was wrong, and Ellen just broke down crying. She started apologizing for crying and for looking terrible and said, quote, "I'm gonna get it together." together. Her friend assured Ellen that she could talk to her about anything, but that's when Ellen said, quote, "No, don't worry about me. This is your big day and this is exciting." And so after this, Ellen just sort of brushed it off, and she didn't want any of the attention on her because once again, this was her friend's wedding and she wanted it to be all about her friend. Ellen's father-in-law, aka Sam's father, would go on to say that he worked at the same school as Ellen and he believed Ellen was overworking herself. Ellen would walk into work every day with a big smile and seemed to be great, but her workload was overwhelming. This was her first time teaching a really large classroom, and so it was really hard for Ellen to get the swing of things and really take care of her classroom. She was having a lot of troubles as a first-time teacher and getting in with her classroom, and would continuously work every single day, even outside of class hours, just to ensure that her kids got the best education possible. And then on January 26, 2011, Ellen went to her usual work day in the morning, but there was actually a really bad blizzard during the day, and she left work early due to it. And on the way home, she would get gas at 1:26 p.m. before going off home. On this day, Sam was said to also go home early and spend time with Ellen and said that it was a normal day for them. Ellen did some grading and then later some wedding planning on the computer. And then at 4:50 p.m., Sam goes to the apartment gym for about 30 minutes before he left the gym at 5:30 as seen on security footage and then going back to the apartment. Sam then says that when he went to his apartment, he couldn't get in because the wing latch was locked on the inside. And you can only swing the wing latch from the inside. And so he started knocking and banging on the door, yelling for Ellen's name, calling her and texting her, but there was no answer. And this was actually confirmed by neighbors because neighbors came outside to see what was going on, and Sam would explain to them that he couldn't get into his apartment. And although Sam said that he tried to call Ellen a bunch of times, phone records would show that he only sent 9 text messages and no calls along with an email. The text messages goes as follows. At 5:32 p.m., Sam sent, quote, "Hello," and then, quote, "Open the door." And after these messages were sent, instead of calling Ellen, which would be the obvious choice, because if you're trying to get inside of your own home, it would only make sense to call the person inside of the home. But he didn't call Ellen. He actually called Ellen's mom to tell Ellen's mom that he couldn't get inside the apartment. And so Sandy is a little confused. She's like, okay, well, what do you want me to do about it? Like, I'm 5 hours away in New York. Maybe she's just in the shower. So Sam hangs up and texts Ellen again at 5:35, mind you, 3 minutes later, saying, quote, "What are you doing?" And then at 5:26 p.m., he said, quote, "I'm getting pissed off." At 5:41 p.m., he said, quote, "Hello," with 8 exclamation points. And then at 5:54, 13 minutes later, he says, quote, "You better have a good excuse." After this, at 5:54, he sends an email to Ellen with the subject, quote, "Open," and the email saying, quote, "The effing door." At 5:57 p.m., he writes, "What the F?" and "Ah," with a bunch of exclamation points. And from security footage, after these were sent, we see on the footage that Sam comes downstairs and goes to the building security guard on duty and asks if he has a key to open the door or if he has maybe something to unlock the swing latch with. The security guard says that he doesn't have a key, nor does he have anything to open up the door, and even if he did, he's not allowed to do that. That's more something that the police is allowed to do. And then 1 minute later, Sam is seen on footage getting on the elevator up to his apartment. At 6:11 p.m., Sam sends his last text saying, quote, "You have no idea." At 6:14 p.m., Sam makes a call to his cousin named Kamian. This call lasts about 6 minutes from 6:14 to 6:19, and then after that, he continues to call his other cousin, but once again, Sam does not call Ellen. He only calls everyone else besides Ellen. And then at 6:21 p.m., Sam is seen on footage going back to the lobby and sitting around until 6:24 p.m., Sam gets a call from his Uncle James, who is Kamian's dad. And for the rest of the story, keep Uncle James in mind because he's actually quite a big character in this story. James Schwartzman was a famous judge in Philadelphia and was on the ethics board and president of Pennsylvania Court of Judicial Discipline. Sam had a conversation with James and then later hung up and then talks to the security guard from before to ask him if he could accompany him while he breaks down his own door upstairs. Now, the security guard obviously says no, he can't leave the lobby because that's kind of his job and he needs to keep tabs on who's coming in and out, but if he does break down his door, he's gonna have to call the police because that is illegal. Sam would later come out several more times from the elevator to ask the security guard the same exact question, and all times the security guard obviously said no. Now, this is a key piece because according to Sam's story, he said that he was accompanied by a security guard as he broke down his door, but as you can clearly see from footage and testimony of the security guard, Sam goes back upstairs to his room before breaking down the door. No security nor any of the staff went upstairs with him, and on footage, you can clearly see that no one was with him. And then at 6:31 p.m., Sam broke down his door, and that is when Sam would walk into the kitchen and find Ellen on the kitchen floor with a knife sticking out of her chest. And that's when Sam immediately called the police. Now, what's weird about the phone call is that Sam doesn't even mention the knife that's in Ellen's chest until 3 minutes into the phone call. And in the phone call, he says that he just realized there's a knife in her chest. But weirdly, in the beginning of the call, the dispatcher had encouraged him to perform CPR. And so if he was about to perform CPR, he would clearly have seen the knife in her chest. At 6:31 p.m., the call was made, and then at 6:33, paramedics were dispatched. And then at 6:34 p.m., Sam's cousin, who he called earlier, was seen on security footage going up to Sam's apartment, and then 2 minutes after that, at 6:36, is when the paramedics showed up. Now, although the man in this footage looks like Sam's cousin, Sam's family would later deny this claim and say that it wasn't Sam's cousin, it was just a random guy that looked like him. And when the police and paramedics show up, that is when they walk in and examine the crime scene. Immediately when they walk in, they notice that there are some off things. On the kitchen counter, the knife block was tipped over with an orange cut in half on the counter, and next to it were blueberries in a strainer, as if Ellen was in the middle of cutting up some fruit. Ellen was found on the floor with her legs out and hunched over, kind of like she was sitting up, but she was putting all of her weight in the front of her. Beside her was a pair of glasses, and in her left hand was a clean and plain white towel. But police bring Ellen to the hospital and find Ellen was not just stabbed once, but she had 20 stab wounds all over her body. Some were on the back of her head, a huge gash on the top of her head, stab wounds on her neck, her chest, her upper stomach, and the knife that was still in her chest. Ellen was also found with bruises all over her body in different stages of healing, specifically on the backs of her legs, right arm, and abdomen, meaning that these bruises had been happening over a long period of time. Her injuries were so bad that doctors described her injuries as someone in contact sport like football or soccer. When backup police arrived, it was said that one of the police officers went downstairs to fill the new officers in on the situation upstairs, and one of the officers said to the other, quote, "You've got a murder upstairs." At one point, Sam's uncle did indeed show up and demanded that he go upstairs, but was denied due to the horrific scene taking place, and it was considered a crime scene at that point. Another odd occurrence is that the residents nearby would say that Sam was seen walking out of the building in handcuffs, but what exactly for? How could the police have enough evidence to arrest him just by looking at the crime scene? So Sam was then taken to the station, but was later released the next day. The next day, Sam's uncle calls the building manager and demands that he be taken upstairs to Sam and Ellen's apartment because he needs to grab a suit for Sam for Ellen's funeral. The receptionist says that he needs to ask the manager because there was a crime scene there yesterday, and for some reason, the building manager had just let him in without asking him any questions, without asking him to show proof of
of who he was, they simply just let him upstairs into the active crime scene. But the receptionist girl did have a very weird feeling about this. She followed her gut feeling, and her gut feeling was telling her that something was off. So she told the uncle that he was allowed to go upstairs, but before he went up there, she decided to take a video of the apartment so that the police would know how the apartment was left before the uncle got there. And thank God she did, because footage showed that the uncle had taken Ellen's personal laptop, her business laptop, Sam's laptop, and Ellen's phone. The day after this, police ordered a search warrant and were able to retrieve back the laptops and phone from the uncle. Doctors later did an autopsy where they would reveal even something weirder. The doctor who did the autopsy, Dr. Osborne, ruled Ellen's death as a homicide because you don't just stab yourself 20 times or hurt yourself in places that you can't reach. But the very next day, they backtracked it and said that it wasn't a homicide. It was just suspicious. They literally said that. They said that it wasn't a murder. It was just suspicious, whatever that means. And then on February 18th, 2011, 3 weeks later, Dr. Osborne changed the cause of death to suicide. Doctor said later on that he indeed did change the cause of death after having meetings with the district attorney offices, officers, and his boss, the chief medical examiner. He said that he was given more time to analyze the situation, the crime scene photos, and Ellen's body, as well as her medical history, because she had gone to a psychiatrist just 3 times and was currently on anti-anxiety medication. And if you take a look at the 3D anatomical recreation of Ellen's wounds and what they looked like, weirdly, she also was seen with stab wounds on her back. And so if there was stab wounds on her back, how in the world is this a suicide? It seems like she was struck from behind, which would explain why there was no defensive wounds found on her either. There was one doctor that said specifically that the stab wound had went through her spine and brain, and these stab wounds would be so painful, it would be unbearable for Ellen to continue stabbing herself. So when this came out, Ellen's family especially felt like this was a slap in the face, because this was not a suicide. It just made no sense. Everyone in the family believed that Sam was the killer, and he was being let off due to the connections that he had. Another really odd thing is that due to this, the family had requested an independent autopsy, which was done by a woman named Dr. Adams, who after this said that she had no recollection or reports of doing an autopsy on Ellen. Now, clearly, with the gaslighting going on, there's something happening, because as soon as the family gets close to answers, everyone is just bypassing it and ignores it. And there was even a famous criminal forensic pathologist by the name of Cyril Wett, who worked on cases like the John F. Kennedy assassination, JonBenet Ramsey, and when he was reviewing Ellen's case, he says that he has never seen anything like this before, and he can't wrap around how a medical examiner could deem this as a suicide. Another famous forensic scientist by the name of Harry Lee, who worked in the O.J. Simpson trial, said that the number of wounds, the types, and the blood patterns are similar to a homicide, and her death should at least be undetermined, not a suicide. He noted that although Ellen's body was sitting upright when she was found, there was dried blood that had dripped from her nose to the side of her ear, as if at one point she had been lying down, but then was moved, unless someone had moved her. Henry also goes on to say that this was a very odd way to off herself, because usually, if you were looking to off yourself, you wanted to be fast, but instead, she decided to do something more gruesome and painful, such as stabbing herself, which is the slowest way to die. They also pointed out that in the apartment, the door latch was not taken off, and there was no way to open without popping the lock off. And unfortunately, even to this day, Ellen's family is still trying to get the autopsy changed and re-examined. But the medical examiner's office, in response, said that due to the lack of defense wounds and the door latch, the medical examiner's office shouldn't be legally pressured to change their professional and considered determination. And even after 12 years, the medical examiner's office refuses to look into the death of Ellen. As of today, in 2024, the parents are still fighting for justice and to get Sam or his cousin or his uncle or whoever did this locked up and not on the streets with the public. And yeah, that is the end of today's case. If you guys found this case interesting, make sure to give it a thumbs up and subscribe if you are on YouTube.
YouTube, or if you are on Spotify, Apple, wherever you can find podcasts, make sure to rate it 5 stars because that really helps me out a lot. I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your day today. Make sure to be safe out there, get outside today, and as always, I love you, I love you, I love you, and I will see you guys next week. Bye.